Welcome, everybody, to another great edition of Talking Tigs, the May the 4th be with you edition of Talking Tigs. I'm Scott Gerard. Joining me, as always, is Tommy Johnson and, again, Daniel Zollinger. That's right, folks. We're back up to full strength. So we got a good one for you this week. Maybe not as good some news to report on the LSU series versus Texas A&M as we lost the series, but we will have that. A lot of post-NFL draft and also college football portal news. Basketball, too, actually. But we are happy to have Daniel back with us, so we'll probably throw it to him pretty early on, but hope both of you are doing well. I mean, so it was a good weekend. You know, tomorrow's May the 5th, you know, Cinco de Mayo. But I think a lot of people are probably celebrating already. And man, it was a weekend for weather delays in the SEC baseball world, but still plenty of results. But, you know, hope you guys had a good weekend. We're going to go to you two, of course, Daniel, but Tommy, how's it going?
Good to be with you. Good to have our co-host back. Disappointing weekend in Texas A&M, but happy to be talking about it with you.
Yep. Hello, guys. Back from abroad, from Australia, New Zealand. I know y'all did a good job over the last, I guess it was 3 weeks without me. So sorry I was gone, but I know y'all held it down. And I was trying to keep up with the baseball and other news as best I could while I was over there, given the time difference. And I saw some wins, mostly good things, including the series win against Tennessee. I think we beat Alabama as well. So those were all fun. And yeah, glad to be back in the States with you now and going forward. So lost that rough series against A&M, concluding just earlier today. But we can break all that down.
We can, but we got to break down your trip, my man, because we did hold it down while you were gone, but we were hoping to live vicariously through you on some of the reporting that you were going to give back to us, because, you know, you went to literally the opposite side of the world, and I didn't know that, but you were actually you were able to take in some football. I mean, it's always football season somewhere in the world, right? I thought you were maybe recruiting some, you know, LSU special teams players like we've had in the past, but I'll let you tell it. But I also saw some portal additions for LSU basketball that are like, you know, guys outside the country. So I don't know, man, maybe you were more incognito than you let on to believe. Did you secure all these recruits or what?
I was doing my best. Unfortunately, I didn't really meet too many other LSU faithful, which has occurred on previous international trips, like when I ran into some Baton Rouge people, like in Northern Ireland and stuff. So that didn't really occur. Although I did see some random people like walking around with like Florida Gators t-shirts I saw, and then some Tennessee. So the SEC brand just means more, even in Australia and New Zealand. You referenced the football. That was something that we were planning on doing, and we took in a lot of it in Melbourne and Australia. They, really all across Australia, they play, as we know, Australian rules football, which I didn't know much about the rules or really anything. I only was aware of it because they have that kind of pipeline of Australian rules football punters to both the college and the NFL ranks, including LSU's own Brad Wing, who's an Aussie and was in the NFL for a while as well. So I wanted to check that out, and we ended up seeing two matches of Australian rules football. They just call it the footy over there. So the first one, so it was Easter weekend when we were there, and the first one was on Saturday, the day before Easter, between Melbourne FC, I guess the hometown team, and a team from Fremantle, which I had to look that up, but that's on the west coast of Australia. And it was at the Melbourne Cricket Ground, which is the biggest stadium in Australia, about 80-something thousand seats, pretty sizable. Okay. Yeah. But this one wasn't as well attended. I don't really know why. I guess that they didn't have that many people. I think it was only about 20,000 in attendance, but we were right down there on the rail pretty much. And so we took it in. I learned a little bit of the rules. It's kind of like rugby, I would say, the most part. The field is an oval shaped like an egg, pretty much. It's bigger than an NFL field. I think it's about 150 yards long and about 75 yards wide. And then they have like four posts, just vertical posts on each end of the field. And the objective is to kick it between the two main posts, and you get 6 points, kind of like a touchdown. And if it goes through the outer posts, then you get 1 point. So you really got to nail the one in the middle. And then they run the score pretty high. It's usually about like 100 to 100. So plenty of scores. And then they go crazy. But yeah, pretty physical as well, because they'll like kick the ball to each other and they don't have pads on. It's just like tank tops and shorts, and then they'll kind of spear each other in the air trying to intercept. So I could definitely see some of that talent translating to tackle football if you maybe put on a few more pounds. These are people who are more of a kind of soccer player builds than NFL. Mm. But yeah, we had a lot of fun. People were very passionate. And then so we decided to go again on Monday, the day after Easter, which is also a holiday in Australia. And that one was way bigger scale between two local teams, Hawthorn and Geelong. But they packed the place. They said they announced it was a record Easter Monday crowd of it was like 89,000. So it was top to bottom. Felt like SEC environment. People going crazy with every score.
Real quick, do they tailgate?
Not that I really saw. It's pretty much in the middle of the city, but it definitely was interesting getting in and out. People were packing like the local trains and stuff. I didn't see any brawls or anything, but they're very passionate, and that was a lot of fun. Oh, actually, there was a brawl on the field. A guy got punched in the face, and he got ejected and then suspended, I saw, after the game. So they were getting after it. And these were like crosstown rivals, which is why it was so crazy. And then like everybody who we were talking to was like, you have to be on one side or the other. But that was a lot of fun. And if any of our listeners ever make a stop in Sydney or Melbourne or over there, then I definitely encourage them to go check that out. Yes. that was the main sporting stuff. When we were in New Zealand, their main thing is the rugby. People may know the All Blacks rugby team, mm-hmm. for kind of famous for doing the haka dance that came to LSU import through guys like Braden Fajoko and stuff a while back. Didn't see any rugby, but definitely saw a lot of people sporting the All Blacks jerseys, and they had rugby on the TV all the time and stuff. So I don't know if that's ever going to get very popular in the U.S., but that's what they enjoy over there. But overall, very fun trip with stops in Sydney, Melbourne, in Australia, and then Queenstown and Auckland in New Zealand. So if any listeners need any travel recommendations, let me know.
Yes, you can reach out to Daniel independently. And I don't know, I have a guess as to why the rugby may not translate as much, because, I mean, they hit hard. But, you know, without the pads and the helmet, you just don't hear it. It's like a dull thud, or maybe players aren't putting as much into it because they know they don't have any pads. So it's more of like a, just get the guy to the ground with your body. But yeah, maybe if they had pads, it would be cooler. But interesting take on the whole Australian football thing. I was going to ask, I don't know if their style of play would translate, but do you think any of the different rules would apply, like if those would maybe work better than something the NFL or college football has?
I'm not sure. That there was one rule that still kind of confuses me, like, because if a guy is running with the ball, which is shaped more or less like a football, you can tackle him and then you get the ball. But the tackle, like, literally we looked at the rules, it says it can't be too high or too low. You basically have to like form tackle them like right around the midsection, and if you hit them like too high or low, then they'll call a penalty. So that was kind of like our football, but it seems a very judgment based. Like I saw a lot, it's like, that looked pretty clean to me. And then everybody's up in arms that it wasn't a clean tackle. So there was a lot of screaming at the refs as well. So at least you can see that translates internationally, that no one really likes the refs. Also, this is really weird. The refs also made themselves kind of a strange part of the game. Like if the ball goes out of bounds, instead of having like a throw in for soccer, or like they just bring it back to the middle like football, the ref himself gets the ball, stands at the very edge of the field, turns around backwards to like face the crowd, and throws it back over his own head, like into play. Wow. So the first time I saw it, I was like, what in the world is going on? But maybe they say that that's fair. Like, so the ref can't know if he's throwing it to one team or the other. And then they kind of scrum for it coming out of the air. But that would be weird. Like if in the NBA, the ref like throws the ball back into play.
Well, it's kind of like a jump ball.
Yeah, I guess so. Right. And they did something basically like that too at the beginning, except they spike the ball off the ground like into the air instead of just like tossing it up. But overall, a fun time, and I don't know if I'll ever see it again on TV, but maybe I'll become a fan over time.
Right. You can get that Australian package that airs at like 3 a.m.
Right.
Or whenever it was. But anyway, that's a good reporting.
You can get
back.
Sky Sports to get that.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I can see it now, because if the ref just throws it in over his head, yeah, there's no discrepancy there. Plus, it saves you all that review time of whose fingertip the ball last touched. If it's that close, just throw it back in play. Let's get on with our lives.
Yeah.
Anyway, did you have something else?
No, that was it. The only other American sports connection was, I don't know if y'all know who Steven Adams is. He's a professional NBA like basketball player, but he's like known from being from New Zealand. He's kind of got the tribal tattoos on his shoulders and stuff, but you saw him everywhere. He's like the national hero, even though he's kind of just like a role player, like guy in the NBA. Like, he's good, but not a star.
Is he even still in the league? Like, wasn't he with the Thunder like back in their heyday?
Yeah, he was on the Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook Thunder. I think he's still in the league. I'm not quite sure how good he is, but like everybody knew who he was, and he's got to be raking in millions in like sponsorship revenue. He's like the face of New Zealand. So I guess he's their one kind of international export in a fairly small country, but I guess one guy is well known over here.
Yeah. Well, speaking of well known, did you see any Ben Simmons jerseys anywhere?
I did not. And I was kind of on the lookout for him, like if he was as popular stateside, but I think he's kind of distanced himself from his Aussie heritage.
Probably.
I don't know if he's popular anywhere.
That's the other thing I was going to say. But I figured last chance might be Australia, but I guess not. Oh, well. Anyway, man, if something comes up to you later in the podcast, definitely bring it back up. I know you probably saw a lot in even however long you were there. It's probably still seemed like a short amount of time, but thanks for telling us about all that. I guess we do have to get to the LSU baseball news. Like we said, they did lose the series against Texas A&M on the road. I mean, it was close. At least they didn't get, you know, completely embarrassed, although I think they definitely did have a chance to take the series. They just faltered. You know, they weren't able to close it out. I don't know. I guess my opinion up front, I mean, and plus we can go over plenty of other SEC news before you guys feel sad or disappointed or angry. Trust me, you're not alone. The SEC it's a little bit more. We're a brethren. A lot of upset and just confused fans this week, last week, the last few weeks. It's all over the place, really. I don't know if you guys watched any other action, but I'll be honest. I thought that the way that A&M was playing before us, even before the Texas series, even though they got swept, every game was decided by one run. And it was all pretty much down to like the last swing or two, you know, in each game. So I was like, man, Texas A&M kind of turned it around. We're still kind of meddling. You know, we started off hot. Now we're kind of hit or miss, depending on if we're home or away or whatever the case. So I thought, I think it's possible we could lose the series. But as long as we do it gracefully, I don't think we'll get penalized too much, at least in far as the pollster's eyes, you know, seating and all that. That's where I stand. So it sucks we lost today, but I still kind of feel like, well, kind of what I expected. I'll be curious to hear what you guys have to say, and then I could, you know, add some more analysis. But I mean, I don't know, were you completely surprised by the series loss, or was this, you know, kind of what you expected too?
Well, I think I was a little bit surprised. I thought we were a better team than A&M. I think that we've shown that throughout the whole, you know, on the whole season, and we had opportunities to beat them both in game. We could have taken care of this in game one, and we had the lead going into the eighth or in the eighth inning of game three. So I think we, you know, really missed an opportunity here. Now, is it the end of the world? Like you said, no. You know, do I think it's still, you're playing on the road in the SEC? I think that still means something. But I mean, the Stanfield playing, you know, making those terrible errors in center field, costing us runs in game one. You know, bats being cold in game one. Milam was having a rough go of it. I mean, I don't know. I think that we definitely had the opportunities, and just couldn't capitalize, and that's disappointment.
I agree. A&M being the preseason number one, they're a strong team, and they showed that this weekend, especially in a hostile environment like College Station. Their stands were full, but LSU being the team that we are and the success that we've had, we definitely were, if not expecting, at least hoping to win the series or even sweep. And we had great chances in all three games, including the second one of the doubleheader that we did end up winning, just 2-1. But all three were very close. We got solid performances on the pitching. Cade Anderson, I think, had 12 strikeouts and threw six innings, maybe one of his best performances of the season. Tommy referenced pretty much the only thing that came across on his card was when Chris Stanfield on a fly ball took two steps backward, then realized the ball was way in the front. I don't know if he lost it in the sun or whatever, and then almost made the diving catch, which would have kind of erased his wrongs, but it popped out, and then A&M scored one, and I believe led to one more, and then he directly led to one more later in the game when he literally just buffed the catch. So that was really the deciding factor, although you would have liked to see the basket going a little bit more, given that the only run we scored was how did we score in that first game? It was, oh yeah, Jared Jones
solo home run,
solo like shot, usual. Yeah. And so they didn't give him much support, which is frustrating. But we definitely could have won that game. And then the second game, slightly better. Anthony Eisen went nuts on the mound, going the complete game, allowing only one run, ringing up a whole bunch of strikeouts as well, because he's had a bit of an up and down year, positive overall, but definitely his best performance. And thank goodness that we plated two in that one to get the win, because if we would have wasted that, then that would have been really just frustrating. And one of those runs coming on that kind of crazy bunt by Josh Pearson, like right into the gap towards the second base. And we had the guy sprinting home from third base. So that made all the difference. And we thought we had the good momentum going into Sunday. Then that was another tight one with Cason Evans doing okay, but running up the pitch count early. Then we had to go to the pen, and we thought we were all right after Luis Hernandez 2-run home run took us up 4-2. And we were handing the ball to Zach Cowan, probably our best reliever, but him giving up one crucial 3-run shot was all she wrote in the eighth. And I think the announcer said that LSU was like 27-0, something like that, win leading after seven, this being our first loss. So that really stings when we basically had the win and the series in our grasp and to fumble it at the last second. So things to learn on, bitter taste at the end, not disastrous. I would say we competed in all three, but really would have liked to get one of those other two that we lost here.
Amen. And we were so close.
I was going to say, yeah, exactly. Like it's not like we were blown out and it's like, well, I chalked that one up. Like we were in both games, had the lead in game three for most of the game, and had Cade Anderson absolutely shoving in game one. Like when the guy puts up 12 Ks, you gotta win. Like you gotta give him that win.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I was gonna say, is the pitching's there, guys. You'd mentioned Ianson. Dude put on a man performance. Even Jay Johnson said much. He's like, that dude came into this program a man, and he just showed it, you know, today. Went the distance. That's twice this year we've had our pitchers go the distance. So that bodes well for us in the postseason. I guess my only thing is it's, I don't know, we play a little bit different on the road. I imagine during the postseason, if we have a top eight seed and we're at the box, we feel comfortable at our chances with a regional and a super regional. When we get into Omaha, you know, all bets are off. But it's like, would that be different as opposed to us being in a different stadium? I mean, it is on the road in the SEC, so that's why I don't think the pollsters will penalize us too much, especially like you said, you know, we kind of had game three in control for the most part. We just let it slip. And I don't know, it kind of goes back to, you know, the last few weeks or, you know, month or so, man, it's just the pitching's there. It's just the bats are either there or they're not, depending on the game. And, you know, God bless Jay Johnson for trying to mix it up. I mean, he had Jared Jones going first. He had Curiel hit up this guy. And he's putting Josh Pearson in there when he had Jake Brown in there in right field. So Jay's working on it. You know, he's trying to find the solution. I just don't know if that's what it is. I think it's just, you know, it's a cyclical thing. Our guys either on fire, usually on a Tuesday or like one game on this weekend series, or we're, you know, we're just getting by. But it's good to know we at least have the pitching to get by, because I haven't done an actual assessment of the 2023 championship winning team, but I know we had some 1-2-3-0 games where, you know, we had just enough offense, particularly that one against Wake Forest in the College World Series semifinals. So it's like, it's good to know that we have the pitching to do it, but I guess our offense just makes me nervous to think that we're, like you said, we could blow a performance like that just because, man, we can't even string together enough hits to, it's like they could get four in an inning. I know we can, we're just not consistent with it.
Right. The hitting is the scary thing to me, because it's not like we didn't get any hits. I mean, we had 8 hits in the first game, 6 in the second, and then 7 in the third, but those only yielded 1, 2, and 4 runs. So it was not necessarily opportune hitting. And like, we left a lot of guys on base. There was multiple times when we loaded the bases and got nothing from it. We only scored runs in 4 out of the 27 total innings, which is kind of crazy. So it's not like we were putting up consistent 1, 1, 2, et cetera, which is how you kind of pile up and get those insurance runs that you can use to finish off and win games like this one today, where we were up 4-2, but 4 was not enough, or that 2-run lead was not enough insurance when a 1-3-run swing of the bat put A&M over the edge. So that was frustrating, and I have to be corrected going into these last couple of weeks, because we've got a very good Arkansas team coming to Baton Rouge this weekend. That's kind of a put up or shut up series, and then we finish the season at former LSU head coach Paul Menary's South Carolina Gamecocks. So definitely two intriguing ones there and opportunities for wins. But like you referenced at the beginning of the discussion, that top 8 national seed with home priority through the Super Regional is pretty paramount. And I think we're in that position right now, but it's definitely not guaranteed if we slide later on in this season. So let's lock it up and get the job done here. And hopefully Jay Johnson will be able to make the adjustments and get some very quality wins against Arkansas.
And it's possible, because they swept Texas after mm-hmm. losing themselves the weekend before. So it's like I said, it's, if you're upset about LSU losing on the road to Texas A&M, hey, welcome to the party. Get in line, because Tennessee has lost, what, 4 straight weekend series in a row. They lost to Auburn this weekend, so they are falling much further. They're on a slippery slope. Then you have teams like, I don't know, Texas, where they seem like they were the cream of the crop, not just in the SEC, but maybe college baseball overall. Then they get swept at Arkansas. First tough road test of the season. And, you know, they faltered. Now we get Arkansas, who, before they swept Texas, I think they had lost like 2 straight series. So it's all over the place. That's what I'm saying. It's just every weekend it's different. So as long as we show up and do what we can at the box, like I know we can, we'll be fine. And if we win that series, I mean, I can't imagine we would lose on the road to South Carolina, right? But as long as if we beat Arkansas, which is a much better team, I think we're fine, as long as we don't crap the bed in the SEC tournament, which I don't think we will. They've changed the rules. All the teams are in now, and it's mm-hmm. you know,
single limb.
Exactly. So I think the way it was set up, the example I saw is there would be a couple games, and then we would get the winner of whoever Georgia ended up playing, and then we would play them, who we haven't faced this year. So could be interesting, but remains to be seen. I don't know. Any final thoughts, Tommy? Because Tigers, I think, are still in a good position as long as we just don't crumble.
My final thoughts. I think it's so super interesting the way that Jay Johnson tools with the lineup. And I mean, you know, they were talking about it on the broadcast. It's like, man, Bry is absolutely smashing. Like, why is he not in the lineup all the time? You know, I find that kind of interesting. I don't know if it's necessarily right or wrong, but I just think it's kind of interesting the way that he, you know, he's constantly tinkering, moving people around. And then also, just want to give a shout out to Josh Pearson, for being like a he's just like a really solid kind of gritty baseball player. He's a, you know, he can bunt. He, like Daniel mentioned, like he had that little safety squeeze that scored us a run. He's got good base running. I don't know if you saw last night. I think it was last. Yeah, it was last night. He like swiped a base because A&M kind of wasn't paying attention.
Right.
Just being a good all around baseball player. And I think obviously Jay Johnson sees that and plays it because he plays a lot. And he's probably not the most talented player on the roster. Like, you could put a more talented player at right field, but I think Johnson appreciates kind of he's got the high baseball IQ, as they say.
He plays the game the right way.
He does, yeah.
Right.
I agree. And yeah, you can't say that Jay Johnson's scared of making changes. Like, I mean, after the first loss in the doubleheader, he pretty much revamped the whole lineup for game two. Yeah. And so you can applaud or criticize those moves, but he does make moves, and he's very interested in these kind of matchups. It's almost like the NFL where all they talk about is matchups, like this wide receiver on this defensive back. Like, Jay Johnson's very much about like this lefty, like, or this guy can't hit lefties, and so I'm going to put a guy in for one batter just so we can take him out. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. We saw that kind of not work today in this last game when they tried to they pulled who was it that they pulled? I don't know, one of our relievers, and they put a guy in, Connor Ware, for like one pitch or one hitter to get, I believe it was Laviolette out.
Jace Laviolette.
Yeah. And then he ended up getting like his first hit of the series. So that was like, oh my goodness.
Well, but that it had worked. I mean, he'd been doing that all weekend.
It works until it doesn't. So that's where you have to like take the good with the bad, I guess.
Yeah. But we burn through pitchers, man. That's one thing he's not afraid to do. Like, the bullpen is always open, always, you know, ready.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like, who's going to step up? Because some guys look great some games, and then you'd think, oh, okay, well, I can use that again in this other game. And then that situation comes up, and then it's like a completely different pitcher. Do want to give a shout out. Maverick Rizzi threw, I think, like an inning and a third or two thirds, and he looked really good because he's one of those guys where we just use him in like it's a situational thing. You know, obviously our Case and Evans and our Zach Cowens are our more mid game relief, maybe our closer, but you know, we still need those other guys to fill in the gaps. Right. I mean, what was that? 23. We had Thatcher Hurd come on in the end, which I thought was kind of going to be what Chase Shores was going to be, but I don't know. It kind of remains to be seen, but you kind of still need that third day starter, or at least some guy that can give you, you know, maybe 3, 4, or 5 innings in Omaha or something, you know?
I think people forget how crucial it was that Thatcher Hurd came on so strong at the end.
Yeah, and then Ackenhausen came in one game through like 6 innings. It was just,
yeah.
Where'd this guy come from? Is this the same Ackenhausen? We need a DNA test. It looks like him, but wow, it's just night and day with the performance. So I guess it remains to be seen with the Tigers, but yeah, I don't know. The only thing I was going to ask you, and maybe it's more for you, Tommy, unless you also played baseball, Daniel, I don't think you did, but I know Tommy did. It's like as far as the Tigers batting, just thinking back to the 23, again, I haven't done a full-on comparison, but it seemed like we were more aggressive at the plate that year. It's like, if it was a good first pitch, go for it. Now I think we're like sitting on those first maybe one or two, and I don't know, it just seems different. But is that a coaching thing or is that players?
I feel like it's a coaching thing, because I've never seen us, like, Jay Johnson's teams were known for offense, but the amount of times that he's been doing squeezes and bunts and trying to move people around, it feels like he's trying to manufacture runs, which is fine, but traditionally that's not been our game. I think it's interesting.
Sure.
And you know, having it might just be a fact that we don't have the power that we've had, like, with, I mean, you think about with Tommy Tanks and then Dylan Cruz, Trey Morgan could really hit it. I think maybe we just have more hitters for average. I mean, Dickinson, I mean, obviously Jared Jones has a lot of power, but Milam, Dickinson, Curiel, Braswell, you know, those guys, they're decent hitters, but they don't, or I mean, some of them are really great hitters, but they don't have a ton of power.
Oh,
so
but Stanfield missed a home run by like,
oh, I know he did. He missed much, it by like right? an inch. Oh. You could see. And then he struck out.
Oh. He struck out multiple times after that. Poor guy.
Yeah.
That was one thing I did miss is, I guess he switched from center to left field. Curiel took over left field. That was because of the one where the ball kind of blew it back towards the infield and he missed it, even though he had it in his glove. I could totally excuse that. The second one, not so much. I didn't think it was like those egregious, or at least that egregious of an error to where you had to change the guy unless he said, coach, let me try left field. I don't know. What'd you guys think about that?
I noticed that move too. I feel like some of those errors were pretty bad.
Yeah. Well, not the one where like he had to dive to get it and it was in his glove and then it popped out. I mean, that's just dumb luck. But yeah, I mean, that second one was bad. And a run or two in the SEC on the road can make all the difference. Here's the thing though. And it's becoming a more noticeable subject, and you could definitely see it this weekend, not just in the LSU A&M series, but in other games. What's up with the umpiring? It's like some of these calls are just horrible, right?
Yeah, we got some. We missed some. Everybody was fired up on Twitter, even across the SEC and some of the other games. Everybody was kind of comparing clips on the umpires, like strike zones just going off the rails. And they're like, SEC needs to clean house and get a whole new batch of umpires. But that is pretty crazy. There was a lot of ones where you're like, I'm pretty sure that was a strike. And then he sits there silent, and then you get rung up with the one that looks 6 inches off the bottom left corner. So frustrating to watch. I know it's a hard job, but it seems like we need to get this thing nailed down.
Absolutely. I don't think it'll change anything, but
I feel like this is always the time whenever you have a lot of bad umpiring, it's the time where they say, should we bring in the robot umps? And I'm anti-robot ump. I think it's kind of lame. I don't know where y'all stand, but I don't want just like a bot back there.
Right. Well, they started introducing it this year in spring training, right? Where they did have it where you could challenge if it was like, oh my God, that's horrible. Let's check the robot ump. Right. So it's like, I feel like they're starting to ingratiate us towards it. We shall see. Did want to mention real quick, though, LSU did win the midweek game pretty convincingly against Southeast Louisiana, who's probably going to go on to win their conference. And we actually might end up hosting them again in a regional, which I'm pretty sure LSU is going to do. Just remains to be seen if we're top eight and going to host the super regional. But they won 15-2, walked it off. And I guess that's my thing is, yeah, we're doing this against these midweek games and, you know, we look great. And then the weekend comes around and it's like we're scrounging for a single. We'll take a hit batter or a walk or something. But, oh, man. Anyway, we don't have to get on to that again. Daniel, I did want to check back in with you because, man, you missed a, let's just say, an interesting NFL draft. I don't know if you were able to catch up on the flip side, you know, as far as what happened, if you were just looking at Saints or things in general. But did you have any takes or reaction to what happened, including, of course, Shador and all that
Shador
drama?
Yeah. Me and Scott went over Shador big time.
oh, I bet. Congrats to Will Campbell going fourth overall, I believe, to the Patriots. And then the rest of the LSU Tigers that did get drafted, definitely a solid draft by the Tigers overall. I think it's that six straight years with an LSU player in like the first or second round, something like that. So not bad. But yeah, the Shador Sanders slide being the big story. I remember it pretty vividly because it was like the last day of our trip. We were in New Zealand doing a wine tour, kind of like you can do in California where they take you like to different wineries and you like taste a few and then go to the next one. They had kind of a cluster of those there on the island. It was a cool thing. But we're on this tour bus and there was three American guys on there, college students, young guys who were like studying abroad. And then like the whole time on the tour bus are like going crazy in the back, like for every single pick, they're like, Shador still hasn't been picked. He's still sliding. And I'm like kind of leaning over, like trying to get the news. And then he finally got picked at the very end. It was like, he finally got picked. And then, so I talked to them a little bit. They were, Syracuse, went to Syracuse University and studying abroad. So they were trying to get their quarterback, Kyle McCord, picked. And I don't think he ever got drafted the whole day until like the very end. But Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I don't know if I believe the conspiracies that the teams teamed up on him. I think they were just, everybody believes in his talent, but they didn't really want the circus attached to the cart there, which is understandable. On the Saints front, I don't really super agree with the Tyler Shaw quarterback pick. A lot of people are in agreement there. Maybe would have rather seen Jackson Dart or somebody else, but no going back. But that's kind of a mess considering they still look like they're keeping Derek Carr. And now they've got a competitor in the back. That's about it, though. I know a few LSU players signed as undrafted free agents, but overall good. And hopefully we'll have some more top picks next year. People are hyping up Garrett Nussmeier. Could he be one of the first quarterbacks taken? I hope so. Do we see the return?
Play for his dad.
Exactly. Does former projected first round pick Harold Perkins have a resurgence and climb his way back up the draft boards? I don't know, but those will be some storylines to look forward to this fall.
Right. And I don't know if you've seen it. I know I saw it actually yesterday on like Twitter or something, but the edits of Arch Manning and the Saints jerseys are already coming out.
They're on a tank for Arch because, I mean, honestly, that's a good storyline, though, right? It's like no one's touched the number 8 since he was at the Saints, and then now his grandson could take it.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, sure. Is he the right guy, though? We don't know.
We've never seen him play a meaningful game.
Heck no. Come on.
He's already the number 1 overall pick, so...
Well, that was another frustrating thing about the Saints drafting Tyler Shaw, because next quarterback season does look like a pretty promising crop, I would say, just a year out. So, like, why not? Like, if we're going to tank, just tank it for a year, try and get way up there and pick Arch or pick Nussmeier, whoever's the top guy, and just go for it instead of just dragging us along with a series of mediocre quarterbacks for years and years.
Well, I mean, I don't think that picking Tyler Shaw means that they won't take another. I think it just means that they are just clueless.
It was round 2. Mm-hmm. Like, was anyone really going to take Tyler Shaw in round 2? Like, we could have probably got him in round 3. Derek Carr's our guy, but we're going to use our second pick on a quarterback because we don't have enough already to back up Derek Carr. It doesn't make any sense. I think Mickey Loomis is probably like a double agent and he's there to tank the Saints. Not unlike the Falcons defensive coordinator's son, who tried to pretend to be Mickey Loomis to call Shadur. I don't know if you saw that, Daniel, but there is always these stories underneath the main stories, and there was a lot of those with Shadur. You can peruse those when you want to. But, yeah, it's weird. I don't know. I think the Saints had a pretty good draft overall. LSU Tigers definitely did, although, you know, it's mostly looks towards Brad Davis because I think he had 4 guys drafted. But I don't know, as far as LSU, I think we did have a couple additions through the portal. Maybe one we're waiting on, which was the safety out of Houston, who I think I had a visit today. But although we did already get a commitment from 4-star cornerback Havon Finney Jr., one other, I don't know if you caught up on that, Daniel, but Tigers doing their thing now that the portal's open. Obviously, we have some needs, and we could have some depth in certain areas, but didn't know if you had anything to say on that, because I really wanted to get to Eric Gilbert's 5th location, because he's going to be playing at Savannah State. By the way, your Tulane Green Wave, they lost, or they're going to lose TJ Finley, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, I saw TJ Finley after having this incident where he's having
some legal trouble.
Yeah, stole a car or something, and he was like denying it, and he's going to be on to school number 6 potentially if he ever sees the field, which is sad considering we were talking about him coming out of high school on the pod way back and
leading the way. I remember, I think Scott, I think we mentioned this on the podcast while Daniel was gone, but Josh LeMoyne famously said that if Joe Burrow didn't take us to the promised land, TJ Finley was going to
the next great one. And yeah, I saw that Eric Gilbert has risen back from the dead. Another talking Tigs relic of the kind of 2019 era, showing a lot of promise in one COVID shortened year at LSU before vanishing away. So these players, they come and they go. I also saw another former Tiger, Denver Harris, was transferring for like the 4th time, mm-hmm. who was, he he was in and out of a Tiger uniform. But yeah, it's a
bunch I don't know if Denver Harris ever played more than maybe, you know, 10 snaps for an LSU.
I remember he got burned on one play, and then like he looked really good the next game, and then I think we benched him after that. I don't really remember why.
Yeah. Oh, but Jack Besh got drafted, which was cool. Yeah, good for him. I think there was another LSU Tiger that played at TCU that was drafted too. But anyway, that was pretty much it. I just wanted to mention all of that because we, like I said, there's not just football portal news. LSU had some basketball transfers, and this is where I thought maybe Daniel was just, you know, trying to be sly about it. Because, well, I mean, we did get some local native guys. We had PJ Carter, which was a guard out of Memphis, which is great. But then we had Pablo Tamba, which is a forward. He came from UC Davis. The guy's originally from Spain. And then there was another guy. I forget his name, but it's kind of a regular name, but he was from Israel. And I'm like, wow, Matt McMahon's not just going through the portal. He's going through like the international portal. I mean, yeah, these guys are playing in the U.S., but I mean, we don't really get those kind of recruits, right? Like guys from other countries, at least hasn't stand out yet. But I don't know. Do you guys have any comments or thoughts about some of these portal additions? Because obviously this is Matt McMahon's all in year, right? Like he's got to do something. Otherwise I think he's probably going to, you know, be shown the door, unfortunately.
Well, he's filling up seats on the bench at least. So there will be some warm bodies out there playing basketball for the Tigers in 2025. But it is a little bit weird that he's going this international route. I mean, the NBA is seeing kind of an internationalization of talent from across the globe. So I guess why not the college ranks? It's just a little weird that, like, I don't know if it's a good sign that he's able to open up the globe and find these players, or if it's a bad sign, it's like we couldn't find anybody local, so we have to go picking through like the Israel C League to get a guy to commit to LSU. I guess we have an international brand though, so Tigers abroad.
Absolutely. And other than that, I don't know that I had anything else. I mean, there was some track and field, which I think is still going, and I believe, what is it? Women's tennis is into the quarterfinal of their tournaments. But anything else that you guys wanted to mention?
I think that's it. Baseball, yeah, midweek game, last one of the year. They don't have one in the final week, so we got the last one on Tuesday at home against Grambling State. And then Friday, Saturday, Sunday at the Box versus Arkansas. Be there. Go Tigers.
And hopefully there's not a rain delay.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Holy cow. Everybody had one. I mean, could you imagine if, LSU had one. We had a doubleheader yesterday. We took one out of two. Probably could have took two out of two with, you know, a few different outcomes here and there on certain situations. But, I mean, I'd hate to be Tennessee where you start a game, you get one inning, then you're down, and then you're like, no, we're done. Like, why did you even start the game? Like, it was already raining when they started. And so their whole weekend was just messed up. A lot of other teams, like, I don't know if you saw some of the videos on why we didn't play at all on Friday night. It was like a monsoon. I think they got 4 inches in College Station Friday night. So obviously that's the case. It's just true. It's like you can count on it, right? Like, rain delays in SEC baseball this time of year. It's a given. Expect it in Hoover, I would imagine, right?
They seem to be able to. It feels like in Hoover, they seem to be able to get the games off. Like, you know, they kind of. It's not like Hoover gets delayed big time, but yeah, expect some maybe a few rain delays and things like that.
Right. Hopefully not this upcoming weekend. I would love to take the Hogs cleanly as scheduled. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Even if we just get 2 out of 3, that's great. But I think the Tigers definitely can do it. I'd say maybe the one thing that the Hogs don't have quite as much as previous seasons is maybe their defense. But I'd say LSU's is pretty good, other than those, you know, few errors this weekend based on the wind at that particular stadium. But I think they'll be fine at home this weekend. And other than that, I think that'll pretty much do it for us here on Talking Tigs. Great to have Daniel back and to get the recap of his stories abroad. Who knows? There might be some more international transfers coming in we may or may not be able to give him credit for. But until next time, hope everyone has a great week. We will have some more baseball recap for you next weekend, of course, as well as any other portal and other lineup news. So until then, stay safe, stay tuned, and we'll talk to you next time right here on Talking Tigs.